I was thinking very much about death. My dear friend Elizabeth Catlett made transition a couple of weeks ago when I was in a place called Morehouse College, having lunch with deans and presidents, etc. And her son Francisco, my phone kept moving and moving and gyrating, and I kept ignoring it until the sixth gyration happened, and then I got up and said, excuse me, went out, and I said in a very fast staccato pace, hey, man, don't you understand that I'm going to be down in Mexico City and no one's going to pick me up to get to Guernavaca? What's the deal here? We got 3 days before we go and see Elizabeth. And I heard the silence, and the silence. I knew she was dead. She had died before we could celebrate her birthday. And at the same time, I was reminded also recently of a dear friend, poet, who died, and we had all gathered and had a big celebration. And as we sat and talked to each other with all these younger poets, one of the poets kept talking about herself. And I said, shut up. I said, shut up, because don't you understand the pain that anytime a poet dies in America, anytime a poet dies in the world, then everybody has to scream and scream, but not talk about ourselves. We have got to say, a poet has died, a poet has died, and the earth should stop spinning right now because a poet has died. Not talking about yourself and yourself and yourself and yourself. But I'm a teacher, and I never told a younger poet to shut up. And so later on, I called her and I apologized. I said, because I understand that your pain was talking and talking and talking. My pain wanted me to jump up on tables and dance and spin death and say, death, 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 how dare you take another poet from us? Do you know how many poets have left us in this 1 year? This is the fourth one. Leave the poets alone for a while. Last words, right? I can see it.
Mother,
right? This is changed it, but this was, I was thinking about my mother.
I got it.
I was thinking about my mother, and all my friends who are sculptors and poets are always older than I.
About death.
And so they are
my dear friend,
replacement
Catholic
mothers, in a sense.
Transition.
And so I was thinking about my mother,
ago,
who was so fair
in
the south
Morehouse
of my father,
College,
who was so dark that what they would do in his T-Model Ford, he would get up front and drive her to the place to get ice cream, and she stood in the back like one of the white women in the south.
And
then they would say to my father, come here, boy, and get that ice cream for your missus, right? Isn't that amazing? And he would get the ice cream, and then they'd drive off someplace,
and
they'd sit and eat the ice cream together, and they would laugh. And when my father told
that
story, he would just smile, lean back on his eyes and laugh. Because as he told me, when I was writing a book about him, he said, that is the only woman that I ever loved.
I knew she was dead.
And even though you wrote those early poems about me and all these women, you don't understand that she was the only woman I ever loved.
And at the same time,
all the rest were just
I was reminded
who came along
also
afterwards.
Recently of a dear friend, poet, who died. And we had all gathered and had a big celebration. And as we sat and talked to each other with all these younger poets, one of the poets kept talking about herself. What's the next one?
And I said, shut up. I said, shut up, because don't you understand the pain that anytime a poet dies in America, anytime a poet dies in the world, then everybody
has to scream and scream but not talk about ourselves. We have got to say, a poet has died, a poet has died, and the earth should stop spinning right now because a poet has died. Not talking about yourself and yourself and yourself and yourself. But I'm a teacher, and I never told a younger poet to shut up. And so later on, I called her and I apologized. I said, because I understand that your pain was talking and talking and talking. My pain wanted me to jump up on tables and dance and spin death and say, death, 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 how dare you take another poet from us? Do you know how many poets have left us in this 1 year? This is the fourth one. Leave the poets alone for a while.
Peace.
Last words, right?
Peace. I am doing a mural in a place called Philadelphia.
I was thinking about peace mural.
I call it Peace is the Haku Song. And I'm asking
all my friends,
all the poets that I know,
all my friends
and all the writers I know, to send three lines about peace. And so I call Sister Alice Walker and Sister Maya Angelou and Sister Toni Morrison and said, send me three lines about
in the south of my father.
And they did. And then I called Krista McBride, the great bass player, and I called Commons. We were in New York here talking about Marvin Gaye's anniversary of what's going on. And he picked me up, and because I'm so tall, as you can see, and as I was coming down, I looked him in the eye and said, send me some chords and some rap about peace,
and eat the ice cream together.
Because we've got to insinuate peace in the eyes of our children. We've got to insinuate the idea of peace all over this earth, and so let's have a peace mural with the Buddhist monks leading us down Broad Street to this mural, to this mural that will talk about peace, because peace is the way. You know, there's no way to it, but peace is the way. We must teach about peace. We must tell our children about peace. We must make them understand that I'm not asking them to write just a peace haiku. I'm asking them to begin to have a way of the haiku, live the way of the haku. No greed, no envy, no killing of each other, but this singular form named haiku, which will make us truly understand what it means to walk and be peaceful without greed. And so, all of you listening here today, send me a haku about peace. As I teach our children, as I go into the classroom, I teach them how to breathe because they don't know how to breathe. And I teach them how to breathe from here and not here, not the throat and the nose. And when they started to breathe for the first time, they cough. But when I teach them to breathe and they breathe properly, they become peaceful. Isn't that amazing? And the class is peaceful. And we listen to each other's breath. When you teach people how to breathe, you teach peace, and you also teach life. You teach life. My pain, the majesty of the haku,
jump up on tables,
the majesty of life and breath.
Death, death, how dare you take another poet from us? Do you know how many poets have left us in this 1 year? This is the fourth one. Leave the poets alone for a while.
Last words, right? Peace. Love. I don't know why I chose love.
A place called Philadelphia.
I mean, why would I choose love?
I call it.
Why would anyone choose love?
And I'm asking all the poets that I know, and all the writers I know, to send me lines about peace. And so I call Sister Nehemiah,
Monk chose love. Monk
chose love. Monk gave us that intellectual love, that intellectual piano going with call and response. He said, I love you, and because I love you, I will give you call, response, answer, SOS, I'm trying to contact you, SOS, come on, answer me as I bang out these blue monk songs just for you. Hey monk, how you be since they beat you up and put you in the jail for 2 days? Hey monk, how you be, man? As you come out and they tell you that you lost your cabaret license and you can only be a weekend player. Hey monk, but we understand that intellectual chord. It made me think, it made me spin. Yeah, I danced too, but it made me understand what it meant to be on this earth and in New York City and having to deal with crap. You said it's crap. Mm-hmm. Doom, 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 doom. It's crap. Doom, 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 doom. It's crap. Doom, 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 doom. But I will bring you this intellect of music. I will bring you this intellect of life. I will bring you this intellect that says you can do it. You can do it. You can survive. You can survive because I'm playing for you. Dun 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 dun. Monk, we heard you and we lived. We heard you and we lived. We heard you even when you stopped playing. And you stop playing, man. We no longer heard you play, but we carried you with us as we walked the streets of New York City. We heard you as we walked the pavements of this city. We heard you. We heard you as we tried to change the country. We heard you, monk. You were always underneath us. You were always that subconscious. You were always there. We heard you, man. There you is, monk. Dun 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 dun. Dee da da da, dee da 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 da. Oh, monk.
Love. I don't know why I chose love.
A place called Philadelphia.
I mean, why would I choose love? I call it. Why would anyone choose love?
Dun, 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 dun.
Bill T. Jones.
Dun, 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 dun.
Bill, I was watching a documentary the other night. When I got back from a place called Alaska, I was watching Bill T. Jones, and he and his hands and his arms and his feet and his legs answer the question, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be human? And he was talking about, I have to dance to Bach. How do you dance to Bach? How do you peel the skin to hear a Bach tune? How do you do a Bach dance? How do you use your arms to Bach with Bach? How do you use your feet to do a Bach dance? How do you use your legs to do a Bach dance? I said, Bill, listen to it. That piece you listen to, it's because his wife died.
How you be since they beat you up?
And Zane died. And your mama died. And I ain't playing the dozens here. Your mama died.
How you be, man?
And so what you do is you dance. You dance. You dance that dirt, that death song of Zane and your mother. And so you will mix with Bach, and you and Bach will bop on that stage. You and Bach, you in that orange pants, and your body so purely naked on that stage. And you moved in that Bach tune, in that intellectual Bach tune, and you threw out your arms and your legs, and you were holy. You were holy, you were holy, and I became holy. I believed because I knew I was in church with you. I believe because you were doing prayer. with your arms and your legs and your feet. And I genuflected. I genuflected, my dear brother, to your brilliance. I genuflected. I genuflected because you were moving with Bach. And you said, Bach, it's been years. It's been years. It's been centuries. But we are together here with your death and my death. And they meet in two and we are one. Because there's only one death.
You were always there. We heard you.
There's only one death.
There you is.
And we all die at the moment of birth. Is death. Bach's wife, your mother, and Zane, at the moment of birth, there is death walking, dancing to Bach. Alaska.
I don't know why I chose
Alaska. I just got back from Alaska. That's a long trip, people. That's a long ride. That's a ride, Bill. That all of a sudden you look out the window and you see only mountains and water.
When I got back from,
you say, where is the land? I started making up a mantra. Where is the land? Where are we going to land? Where is the land? Where are we going to land? Where is the land? Come on, land. You got to come up. You got to come up. I got to see some land because this plane has got to come down.
And he was talking about, I have to dance to Bach.
And I got there in Anchorage.
How do you dance to Bach? How do you
talk about Freedom Sisters, that I was chosen some, but it's been 4 years now, 4 years ago. The Smithsonian and the Cincinnati Museum chose 20 African-American women who had changed America. And I was one of the women that they chose. And when they called me, I was sitting in my study working one day. And the woman from the Smithsonian said, Professor Sanchez, we've chosen you to be one of the 20 women, African-American women who have changed America. And I said, well, just a minute. I can give you 100 more women who've done much more than I've ever done. And there was this silence. And then the woman said, Professor Sanchez, we didn't choose you. There were 25 other people who chose you. Are you interested? And I said, well, yes, I think so. But I just want you to know, I come up through the civil rights movement. In the civil rights movement, we never praised ourselves. We never expected to get praised. We never expected to get anything. What we knew is that simply we had to work. And when we worked, we got out of Dodge and went on and did more work. And so I said simply, thank you so very much. I was going to Alaska. They had chosen 20 African-American women in Alaska who also had done important work. In fact, I said, I didn't know there were 20 African-American women in Alaska, actually. Because that was a joke, because I knew.
I genuflected,
but
dear brother,
we heard you even when you to your brilliance. I genuflected. What was so interesting about that is that
you were moving,
my hotel room faced the mountains, the mountains with the snow. And you know, every time I come near mountains, people, you got to realize that mountains are women. You know that? That's a woman up there. These men are always trying to conquer these women. Oh, yes. They're trying to touch the breasts. They're trying to touch the essence of these women up on these clouds, touching God. And they're up there saying, come get me if you can get me. Uh-huh, I'm here. Come on, come on, come on. Get me if you can get me, but you ain't going to get me. You might come up here for a minute, but I will send you back down fastly fast. Because I'm too cold for you. Because I'm up here with the majesty of the heavens. I am here. Oh, look at me. Come on. Come on up. Oh, you didn't make it. Okay, go back down. Oh, look at you trying to get me and touch me and kiss me and caress me. But I am independent of you. I am these women mountains moving, curving against the clouds, curving against the skies, you know, opening myself to God and any gods that happen to be in this vicinity. I am this mountain full of snow, but underneath the snow is the idea of beauty and life. Come. If you want to come, come and breathe the air that I breathe. But don't try to destroy me. Come and breathe the air that I breathe and the beauty that I breathe, and come and taste this woman residing in the mountain, this woman here who brings beauty to the earth, who says simply, you can come and climb all over me, but you will never conquer me, because I am this woman, mountain, tall, communing with God. Alaska. I just got back from Alaska. Oh, that's a long trip, people. That's a Haiti. Long ride.
Haiti.
That's a ride.
Haiti.
That all of a sudden you look out the window.
Haiti.
Only mountains.
Haiti.
Haiti.
You say,
where is the land?
I started making up
my. I went to Haiti.
Where are we going to land? Where is the land? Where are we going to land? Where is the
land? And we climbed.
We climbed. We climbed. We climbed.
We climbed.
We climbed.
We climbed. And I walked the same path.
And I got there.
That Toussaint and Dessalines walked. And as I walked. As I walked up and kept going up, I could hear Toussaint and Dessalines say, come on, we can do this. We can defeat these French. Come on, we can do this. Come on, Haitians. Come on, mon frère. Come on, let us go and do this. Come on. And I heard John Brown walking up those steps.
And the woman from
I heard Harriet Tubman. I heard Brown and Tubman. And I heard Sojourner. And I heard Douglas.
And I said,
and I heard Brown said, come on, we can change this place called America. We can do that. We can tell people that to enslave another human being is not human. What does it mean to be human? You are not human if you enslave people. You are not human if you enslave people. And as I walked and walked and walked until we got to the top of this great fortress.
I come up through the civil rights.
I can hear Toussaint
in the civil rights movement.
I can hear him singing. I can hear him and Dessalines saying, we have won, we have won. Look at us, Haitians, look at us. Our bones, our black bones are strewn all over this country, but this is our country. We have made the first revolution in the Western Hemisphere, and we will pay for that, and we are still paying for it. We still pay for it as we pay in reparations still to France.
Who also had done.
Can you imagine that? Work. Still fact, paying said, reparations for having won in Alaska, a war,
actually.
A revolution. Toussaint.
That was a joke, because I knew.
I call you Toussaint. I call you Toussaint. I call you Dessalines. I call you John Brown as I move in peace. As I move on this earth, saying simply to people that we've got to look at each other finally and call each other brother and sister. Did you hear me? Can you say brother and sister? Come into my classroom. I call you. How you doing? How you doing, my dear brother? How you doing, my dear sister? Oh, yes. Don't turn away. Don't look away. Don't say, what's wrong with her? Has she gone crazy? I'm not her brother. Does she think I'm passing? No, I don't think you're passing. Although half America is passing. But I do say to you simply that you are my brother. You are my sister. And we began to teach children to call each other brother and sister. We're on our way. We're on our way to peace. We're on our way to being civilized human beings. What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be human? Let's answer that question in the 21st century, because if we don't answer that question in the 21st century, there would be no 22nd century.
Moving. Curving against
what does it mean
the clouds,
to be human?
Curving against the skies.
What does it mean to be human?
Opening myself.
What does
to
it mean
God
to walk upright as a human being? Come on.
This mountain.
Come on, I'm asking you.
Full of snow.
My brother, my sister,
but
put on
the snow. Is
put on the sleeves of peace.
Of beauty.
Put on the hands of peace.
If you
put on
come,
the legs of peace
and
the toe jam of peace.
But don't try to destroy me. Come and breathe the air that I breathe.
Eyes
and
of peace.
The beauty that I breathe. And come and taste this woman.
Give
this
children
woman
peace.
Residing in the mountain.
Don't let
this
them
woman,
learn geography
this woman here
when their head
who
falls
to the
dead
who says
in a foreign country.
You can come
and they can't even find the country on a map.
All over me, but you
they can't find that country on a map
because
where they have died.
I am this
peace
woman.
That's what I'm saying. Peace.
Tall.
Peace for Haiti. Peace for Haiti.
Communing.
Peace for Haiti.
With God.
Peace for Haiti. Peace for Haiti.
Four, 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 four. Alaska.
I should have done this bigger.
I just got back from Alaska.
I should have done this bigger. Death.
That's a Haiti. Long ride.
Death.
Haiti. That's a ride.
Death.
Haiti. Haiti. Haiti.
Death.
Haiti.
Death. Death.
Death.
Haiti.
Haiti. Haiti.
Only mountains.
Death.
Haiti.
Death.
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 Death. Death. Come on. 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 I see you. I see you, Death. I see you. I see you. I see you. In my father's hospital room. I see you in my father's hospital bed.
And desolation.
I see you in the apartment that I just gave up here in New York City because I kept my father's apartment for the last 10 years because I had not turned him loose.
Come on,
Haitian women. Come on, mon frère. Come on, let us go and do this. Come on.
And I heard John Brown.
I had not said goodbye.
And the woman from
I heard Harry Seldon half the year.
I heard Brown and
I walked in that apartment and talked to my father and reminded him
of
an interview that he gave someone from out of this country who said, "Professor, Mr. Driver, can you tell me about Professor Sanchez and tell me how she got to be this fiery woman?" He said, "I don't know. She was the quietest child, you know. She never ever gave me any trouble when she was growing up. I didn't.
I could hear two songs.
All I did was read.
I could hear him sing.
Gave me a book. They fed me books. I went to the library. I love school. I love to read. I gave my family no trouble at all. Period." And he said to the interviewer, this guy from Germany, he said, "I don't know what happened to her. I don't have an idea how all of a sudden."
We still pay for it as we pay in reparations still to France.
But it was because finally,
still paying reparations,
my father
won a war, actually, a revolution.
After you died, I realized there were some things we had not said to each other. Although I remember one afternoon in that 17th floor apartment, you said to me, "Sonia, do you remember the time when you were downstairs demonstrating in front of Harlem Hospital to open up the unions to black and Puerto Ricans? And I was trying to sleep because I was taking care of him for 6 years, and I tried to sleep every moment I could sleep." And I said, "Oh, yeah, I remember." He said, "Yes, I was. I went on the balcony, and I got my binoculars and saw you downstairs, and you all had shut down traffic there on 135th Street and Lenox." And he said, "I turned my binoculars to the left, and there were police coming on horse back, and I looked at you and I realized that all of you didn't see the horseback, the police coming on horseback towards you. And so I dropped my binoculars, I went running for the elevator, and I came downstairs. But as luck would have it, what happened to me that day is that the first black police chief was being driven to work, or I think it was the first police captain, and he got out of the car. And he said to us, New York Corps, "What do you people want?" And we said, "We want to integrate the unions." And he said, "Well, don't do it here at Harlem Hospital. Take it downtown." And we did. And we were there all night until 3 o'clock in the morning until finally the union leaders said, okay, give us a name. And we were so young. We were so very young, and we were not prepared to win that we didn't have any names. And so I looked up and gave my brother's name. Remember, Dad? I gave my brother's, your son's name. And I came home and got home about 4 o'clock in the morning. The telephone was ringing, and I knew it was you calling again to tell me, "Girl, why don't you get married and have some babies and move to Long Island someplace?"
They can't even find the country on a map.
And I got a cigarette and smoked it. I went to the bathroom. I made some coffee, warmed up some coffee, and then I said, "Yeah, Dad." The telephone had rung for about the 28th time. In those days, the telephone would ring forever until you picked up the phone, not ring 7 times and you clicked off.
Peace for Haiti.
And he said, Sonia, why don't you just stop this? Just stop it. You're going to get hurt. You're going to get killed.
He says, stop it. And I said, but Dad, okay. And I won't tell you what I said to him because it was very rude. And then I said, Dad, tell Wilson, my brother, your son, to show up at the union's office because there's a job. And my dad said, a job? I said, that's what we're fighting for, jobs. We're fighting for jobs in New York City. In New York City, we're fighting for jobs for black men and Puerto Rican men at this time. And I said to my father in our apartment, I remember that. And then he said to me, Sonia, I've never told you this, but I am proud of you. And I broke down. And I wept the years away. And I wept the years that we were not together away. And I wept away the arguments and the anger that you had because I got put out of New York City because I was political and had to go to Amherst to teach. And for years, you never let me forget it. I wept all those years away. And as I put the key and locked that apartment this week, I said, I finally can put you to sleep, Daddy. And I can put that history there at 135th Street asleep. Thank you. I should have done this bigger.
I just got back from Alaska.
I should have done this bigger. Death.
That's a long ride.
Death.
Haiti. That's a ride.
Death.
Haiti.
Death. 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 I have laughter. Death. Laughter. It's interesting. It comes after that crying that just did. Laughter. Laughter.
I see you.
I once worked so hard in 1 year with traveling. Because there's always a daughter who takes care of the whole family, you know. I don't know if you have families, you know. There's always one child who takes care of everybody. So I worked very hard. And 1 year in May, after I had graded papers and taken them back to Temple and had come home, I got in bed. I didn't even walk on the field in the morning. I usually walk 3 miles every morning. I didn't do anything except sleep. I ate and slept. And one of my twins said, Mom, what's wrong? And I said, I don't know. I'm just tired. And a friend of mine called me and said, you need to go see this doctor who practices Western medicine and Eastern medicine. And so she checked me out in Western medicine. Then she did Eastern. She touched my pulse and she looked at my eyes and my chakras. And she said, what do you do, Professor Sanchez? I said, well, I teach. I travel. You know, she said, tell me what you do in 1 week. And I opened my appointment book and began to read. And she said, no, not a month, a week. And I realized what I did was a little bit too much, probably.
Gave me a book.
And she stretched me out and began to,
I went to the library.
Do a shiatsu, give me a shiatsu.
I love to read.
And then she said, you should eat microbiotically. And she said, do you have cable? And I said, no, I don't have cable. She said, get cable. You need to watch funny movies. You need to just laugh. You need to laugh and laugh because laughter builds up the immune system. And I remember coming home telling my twins that we were going to get cable, and they laughed. They jumped up and down. They went outside and said, finally, cable. Our mother is catching up with the rest of the world. And I did laugh. And I did get better. And I did laugh. But this thing called laughter, this thing that rolls sometimes from the stomach up through the chest to the mouth, this thing called laughter sometimes that when I look at me sometimes. Have you ever passed by and come back and say, that's me? That is I. You say, no, that's not I. That can't be I. I can't have this gray hair.
And then I lied and said, yes, that's you.
Traffic there.
That is indeed you. I come back again. And when I'm walking on the field, I said, is this the second mile or the third mile? The memory says, I don't know. I don't remember. I said, is that you? And I laugh all over the field because I say simply, ah, look at here. You can't even remember how many miles you've walked. Isn't that something? But this thing called laughter, this thing that has kept what happened people alive, this thing called laughter, this thing that my father, a great griot, used to tell stories. And when I was young, I didn't want to listen to the story, but I had twins. And when he came to the house in Philadelphia, he would tell the same stories to my son and I, my sons, and I would come and stand in the doorway in the kitchen and listen. And he told the story about the first black pilot who piloted the first plane out of a place called LaGuardia going to L.A. And he tells the story about the cockpit door was open and people got on the plane and they looked in and they saw this black pilot. And they sat down. And in those days, they called the flight attendant stewardess. And they pushed the buttons. A stewardess. Is that a Negro in the cabin? In the cockpit, and she said, well, just a minute, let me go and talk to Captain Jack Jones. So she goes in, she says, Jack, I told you to keep the door closed because, you know, people have seen you there upstairs. Don't worry, Janie, don't worry, I'll go on the intercom and talk to the passengers. So he says, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Captain Jack Jones. I'm your pilot for our trip to L.A.,
and he said,
but before we begin today, let me tell you just a little bit about myself. I'm a graduate of Harvard University. I'm also a graduate of Yale University. I'm also a graduate of MIT. I'm also a graduate of Oxford University. And during World War II, I taught all of the pilots how to fly. So if you would just settle down and calm down, I will see if I can get this big motherfucker off the ground.
They're fighting for jobs in New York City.
The laughter
in New York City
that has sustained a people. The laughter that says simply, you can do it, girl. You can do it.
And I said to my father,
you're in Hunter College.
In our
and
apartment.
You went in there at 16 and 18, you were disillusioned, and then you start cutting, and then they called you down, and there was this woman who was going to ask me questions, and you know, and she looked like somebody's grandmother, and so I said she would understand, so I started to talk to her and tell her, but, I don't see me here in Hunter. There's no me. I don't see me at all. And she looked at me, she said, oh, what's your problem? She said, well, what do you want to do? I said, I want to be a writer. She said, oh, there are no Negro writers. Now, even I knew there were Negro writers, people. They weren't at Hunter College, but I knew there were Negro writers, right? And I shut up. And she said, because we let you people in here. We let you people in here so you've become teachers, nurses, social workers. And I sat down and got quietly quiet. And didn't say another word to her.
The key and locked that apartment.
And that's what I did. My father said, you can't do this, girl.
Said,
you know, we have a tradition. I have a college degree and you must get a college degree. And the thing that kept me alive is when I cut those classes, sometimes I went to the Apollo and saw Moms Mabley, who came out on stage in a ragged clothes and these shoes cut out. And this one day I was with Maki Iwamoto, who was a friend of mine, one of my classmates at Hunter, Japanese-American. And Moms Mabley came out on stage. My feet hurt, and the whole audience fell out laughing. And Mackie leaned over and said, why is that funny, Sonia? And I said, I'll tell you later. And on the way out, I said, well, Mackie, it's funny for African-Americans and other people who understand the history and history of African-Americans is that there was a time in America that when we bought shoes, we were not allowed to try the shoes on. And so quite often, that's why you would see people with the sides cut out and the toes cut out, and you had to wear those shoes. And so when she said, my feet hurt, right, we all laughed with that common heritage and that common pain and that common laughter because we said, okay, it might not look good, but it sure is a shoe, and I got to wear it. By golly, by gee, I will wear it, but I will laugh also. And the laughter was at ourselves, and the laughter was at the country, but the laughter sustained us. The laughter says, I'm coming from clouds. Come on, open your eyes. Open your eyes and listen to the laughter. Open your ears and open your pores and open your bloodstream, because I'm going to travel through your bloodstream all the way down to your knees. Ha! And when you genuflect, I will make you laugh at the world, and you will live and survive and be. You will be, because laughter will make you be.
Then there's that other laughter, and you know you're going crazy. That laughter at 12 midnight.
I need 10. I need 10.
I have laughter.
I need 10.
It's interesting. It comes after that crying. That just did laughter. Laughter.
I once worked so hard in 1 year with traveling. John.
Because there's always a daughter who takes care
John
of the whole
Coltrane.
Family, you know? I don't know if you have family.
The last time I saw John Coltrane was on the east side, and we were heading out to California, San Francisco, to begin something called Black Studies. I was in a place called Mexico City. I was going to climb the pyramids because Malcolm had been assassinated. Bam, Black Arts had been destroyed. And I said, let me get out of America, and I went to climb the pyramids in Mexico. And I was walking down El Paseo de la Reforma, and some young men came running towards me. Sonia Sanchez, we've been writing you. We want you to come. Come to San Francisco and teach and help us begin Black Studies. These were students. I said, anything that has black attached to it will die in this country. I just want to climb the pyramids, but you can hang out with me if you want to, but I just have got to get a different kind of air. You know, I just need a different kind of air now. I've got to go a little higher. I must get up and smell a different air. Because this air down here is killing me.
Gave me a book. And she stretched me out and began to do a shiatsu, give me a shiatsu.
I love to read.
And then she said, you should eat microbiotically. And she said, do you have cable? And I said, no, I don't have cable.
Well,
she said, get cable.
I hung up with them for a day. And I told them, no, I'm not going to come to a place called San Francisco. I have a rent-controlled apartment in New York City on Riverside Drive. I am not giving it up for anyone. And then they will come.
They jumped up and down.
Two or three students and visit.
Finally,
I would take them over to Newark to meet with Baraka, who is Leroy Jones at the time. And we would sit down. And they were doing an anthology called Black Fire. And we would sit down and begin to talk about why would we take time to teach people about African-American studies, about black history, and why is it important for me to teach writing, you know, and use Robert Hayden and Gwendolyn Brooks and all these people, Margaret Walker, and all these people who were writing on this earth. And finally, in a place called Newark, I decided to travel to San Francisco that February.
I come back again.
What is amazing about that is that we would get to San Francisco, and the president of San Francisco State will say, oh, no, I didn't promise that we were going to have something called Black Studies at all. And so we were in a place with no job at all. I remember I taught in a high school, and
that has kept people alive. This thing called laughter. This thing.
And I was walking on the campus.
My father, a great griot,
that year, first year, and someone says, Sonia Coltrane is dead. And I went home. I went back to my office. I went dun 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 dun. This is a part of my favorite things. And I remember the last time I saw John Coltrane on the east side with Alice. And the curtain will open. And John Coltrane is playing dun 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 dun, and Alice is playing right behind him, and they are going point kind of point, and everybody in that audience knew it was a full house that they were each other's favorite thing, and we listened and cried as they played, and then the curtain opened further, and out came not Ornette Coleman. Out came, he says, good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
I can't think of the saxophone player,
Jack Jones, the brother who played with him at that time.
LA,
and he took and he said, my favorite thing. And the audience exploded. We stood up and stamped our feet because at some point we had been taken someplace beyond that auditorium. We had been taken out into this atmosphere, to the stratosphere, and we knew that we didn't have to stay with that rhythm, the rhythms, the music that we had heard for so many years before. Oh, God, John Coltrane, that's John Coltrane. Yeah. We hear you. 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 We were there listening to this man who decided to say simply, I can go out of this Western construct and I can take you to Africa. I can take you to the Middle East. And I would take this alto sax and you won't even know where you are. I would like take you out of your skin even. And we peeled our skins and a new skin came on and we were holiness,
right?
We were holy. And you know what it means to be holy in an unholy place. We were holy in that audience, in that place. And they were black, white, green, blue, purple people all holy together. Because Coltrane brought us there saying simply, you're my favorite things, people. If you truly understand that you are my favorite thing, people, you are my favorite thing. And I have learned even to love myself. I've learned how not to kill myself, you know, and I am going to live forever. But a year later, he was dead.
Who came out on
death
stage
came and got that genius.
And his shoes cut out.
My favorite thing is you, Coltrane, playing your favorite thing. My favorite thing was seeing you on stage.
Mom's
blowing,
came out on stage,
making us believe that we could be and would be. We knew that we were human because we heard
and I said, I'll tell
you
later.
Blowing a human song, a song for all of us humans on this earth, saying, come, you can do this, you can do this, you can walk upright as a human being, come, drop all those secret smells, drop it, you can be human, you've got to be human, ah, we are each other's favorite things, yeah, we are, we are each other's favorite thing. Coltrane, I love you. Thank you for having been on this earth. You came and saved us. You saved us. You helped us to come through the 50s and the 60s to the 70s. And we turned around and looked over our shoulder and said, hey, John, Coltrane, we miss you on that train. Your train is long gone, but we are still here following your train of life. Dun 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 John Coltrane.